Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, February 25th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Amnesty International says rights abuses continue in Zimbabwe with the torture of pro-democracy voices, forced displacements, and disregard of the law by state operatives.
We continuously get reports of systematic torture, systematic intimidation, and ill treatment taking place in Zimbabwe. We have evidence.
Differences in the MDC formations divide student activists, resulting today in Zimbabwe National Students Union's executive members disrupting a press conference called by ZINASU President Gilbert Mtubuki for apparently supporting a different party.
How can someone plan and organize a press conference without the knowledge of me as the Secretary General? Even the spokesperson himself is not even aware.
And Mr. Zimbabwe and three senior Zimbabwean journalists filed an application with the Constitutional Court today seeking an order for criminal defamation to be declared unconstitutional in terms of the new constitution.
In this application, we are asking the Constitutional Court of Zimbabwe to declare criminal defamation to be null and void to the extent of its unconstitutionality or lack of compliance with the Constitution of Zimbabwe, particularly looking at Section 61 and 62 of the Constitution.
Amnesty International, a global human rights watchdog, says Zimbabwe is still one of the countries in Southern Africa with a high rate of human rights abuses, torture of pro-democracy voices, forced displacements, and disregard of the law. The organization launched its annual report in Johannesburg today and called on President Robert Mugabe, who chairs both the African Union and Southern African Development Community, SADC, to bring the rights abuses to an end in both the Southern African region and the African continent at large. Benedictine Hlapo reports from Johannesburg.
Tabling the report to the media in Johannesburg today, Amnesty International Regional Director Debros Muchena said although there are no visible beatings and killings of dissenting voices in Zimbabwe, the country is now using sophisticated methods of oppression. Muchena said the continued suppression of freedom of expression and association by using the country's old laws, despite the existence of the new constitution, is a direct disregard of the law and deliberate form of state oppression.
We have seen the existence and continued use of old laws, the Public Order and Security Act, which still requires people to seek police permission before they meet, like in this meeting is still in force. So the lack of congruence between the old laws that were used systematically to target and oppress are still in force. And I think that it means that the new constitution is not finding expression.
Noel Kututo, Amnesty International Deputy Regional Director, said the brutal beatings and torture of journalist Itai Zamara and others who had gathered in Unity Square in Harare, demanding the resignation of President Mugabe earlier this year, is clear evidence that the state's repressive instruments are still in place.
And we continuously get reports of systematic torture, systematic intimidation, and ill treatment taking place in Zimbabwe. We have evidence of ongoing police violence, brutality, and the state of fear being used to suppress people.
Violent displacements of flood victims from Chingwizi camp in Masvingo is one of the incidents highlighted in the report as an act of oppression against the Zimbabwean people. Kututwa says, as chairman of both AU and SADC, President Mugabe has an obligation to ensure that the culture of human rights abuses is brought to an end.
In his leadership role of SADC and the AU, he has assumed certain obligations, and it is his responsibility as chair of those two organizations to ensure that the governance instruments and the principles upon which those two organizations were set up and are founded are implemented and are respected.
Other countries in Africa were also criticized for rights abuses in the report. police brutality in South Africa also came in the spotlight. President Jacob Zuma's government was also criticized for failing to stop the frequent attacks on foreigners by locals. Swaziland also got its fair share of criticism for politically motivated arrests and the use of draconian laws aimed at silencing dissent. And Zambia was also criticized for failing to ensure maximum protection of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender people. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedict Nhlapo.
Responding to the Amnesty International report accusations, ZANU-PF Central Committee member Paul Mangwana told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the accusations are false.
That is not true, and that is an old tired song from Amnesty International. We are following human rights. The people in Kingwezi were put into a refugee camp after they went through the misfortune of flooding of the Tokwe Coast Basin. Government had an obligation to get them proper land where they could settle. After government had secured some land for my people, because I come from that area also, some of them who were mischievous refused to go, and a very few who refused to go. And these are the people here saying their rights have been violated. They are violating their own rights by deciding to stay in a refugee camp called Chiwizi instead of going to permanent home secured by government.
But why is it reports that are constantly coming out accusing Harare of human rights abuses?
I mean, Amnesty International has always taken a stance against us from the time we took land from the white commercial farmers and distributed it amongst our people. So it's an old, tired song. We know they are being sponsored by the British who are refusing to take their colonial obligations more seriously. They know that they agreed with our country that they were going to finance land reform. They abrogated that agreement. Instead of Amnesty International, instead of maligning us as abusers of human rights, they should go to the British and tell them to comply with their contractual obligations.
That was ZANU-PF Central Committee member Paul Mangwana speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Political differences between the Tsvangirai MDC formation and the Welshman Ncube Renewal MDC have spilled over into student politics, with Zimbabwe National Students Union's executive members today disrupting a press conference organized by ZINASU President Gilbert Mutubuki, accusing him of organizing the event without their knowledge and associating with the Ncube MDC. Ivan Chifera's details are from Harare.
Business came to a standstill at the media center in Harare today when rowdy ZINASU members, led by some of the union's executive members, stormed the press conference room, blocking Mutubuki from addressing journalists.
No.
Mutubuki and a colleague were violently removed from the top table by ZINASU members and had to be protected by security guards as some of the student activists shoved and pushed them. ZINASU Secretary General Obey Sithole tells Studio 7 they blocked the press conference because it was not sanctioned by the executive.
How can someone plan and organize a press conference without the knowledge of me as the Secretary General? Even the spokesperson himself is not even aware.
But Mutubuki accused his ZINASU colleagues of hiring MDC Tsvangirai Formation activists to disrupt his press conference.
The issue is that the Secretary General and the spokesperson have organized the MDC activists to disrupt this press conference. But as for me, I don't understand what is happening, because it was actually a surprise, because I'm the chief spokesperson of the union.
ZINASU spokesman Avoid Masira hit back, accusing Mutubuki of preaching MDC renewal politics in the organization.
He is still locked in the political affiliations issue, because he's from renewal and he thinks the other guys are from retention. But the issue is, we are ZINASU. What we want is to move the student cause. We are not affiliated to any political party, but he's doing things in line with his renewal party. So that's what we don't want.
He further accused Mutuboki of trying to replace all executive members with members aligned to his party, saying they will block his attempts if he tries to do that. MDC Renewal spokesperson Jacob Mafume said the MDCT cannot dictate who the students must align with, adding the students' body and individual students should be allowed to make their own political choices. MDCT spokesperson Obet Gutu told Studio 7 the MDCT is a democratic party which respects people's freedom of association. He added that while his party would persuade people, it would not force people to join it. This is not the first time that MDC politics has caused a problem in Zinasu. In 2009, the Students' Union's mother body split over a decision on whether or not to support the MDCT in the constitution-making process. The past decade is littered with many examples caused by divisions over opposition politics. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Media Institute of Southern Africa, Oromisa, Zimbabwe, and three senior Zimbabwean journalists today filed an application with the Constitutional Court seeking an order for criminal defamation to be declared unconstitutional in terms of the new constitution. In the application filed by lawyer Chris Mike, Mr. Zimbabwe argues that Section 96 of the Criminal Law Codification Act is unconstitutional as it does not comply with Section 61 and 62 of the Constitution and should be struck off. Section 61 and 62 protect the right to freedom of expression, media freedom, and access to information. Mr. Zimbabwe is the first applicant, while journalists Ngaba Mashazi, Sidney Saizi, and Godwin Mangujga are the second and third and fourth respective applicants in the matter. The fifth applicant is Roger Dean Stringer, an independent publishing consultant. Mashazi and Stringer have been victims of the law in question. The Minister of Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who is also the Vice President of Zimbabwe, Minister of Information, Media and Broadcasting Services, Professor Jonathan Moyo, and Attorney General Prince Machaya are the respondents and they have 10 days to oppose the notice. Earlier, we spoke with Attorney Chris Mike about the application.
I can confirm that I did file a constitutional court application for a determination in terms of various sections of the Constitution, which sections basically establish the legal rights of the applicants to approach the highest court of the land, the Constitutional Court of Zimbabwe, for relief in respect of their dissatisfaction with criminal defamation. Essentially, in this application, we are asking the Constitutional Court of Zimbabwe to declare criminal defamation to be null and void to the extent of its unconstitutionality or lack of compliance with the Constitution of Zimbabwe, particularly looking at Section 61 and 62 of the Constitution. 61 relates to freedom of expression and freedom of the media, and 62 relates to access to information.
Only last week, the same court ruled that criminal defamation is still operative and the law in question had only been struck off in terms of the old Constitution. What does this mean?
What this means is that journalists and citizens who wish to exercise their right of freedom of expression and freedom of the media are still vulnerable to the harshness of criminal law or criminal procedure. This is precisely why Mr. Zimbabwe and the other applicants deemed it fit to approach the court yet again to make a challenge against this law. In fact, last week and in December 2014, the Honorable Judge dealing with the matter made it clear that citizens were free to approach the court again.
That was lawyer Chris Mike representing Mr. Zimbabwe and four others speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Economic commentators say the cancellation of Afreja Bank's license yesterday clearly shows how vulnerable the banking sector remains due to sustained liquidity challenges. Afreja had its license revoked after failing to meet the minimum capital benchmark of $25 million set by the central bank. Afreja becomes the second bank to collapse in less than 2 months after the Allied Bank, which shut down last month for the same reasons. The lack of stability in the banking sector has many people concerned, and an MDC Senator, Dorothy Tolakele Khumalo, is pushing government to bail out the sector and struggling businesses. Economic analyst Rejoice Ngwenya is warning a domino effect seems to be taking root and threatening more banks.
Well, it's an indictment of what the government has been howling about, called indigenization of the banking sector. It really shows that although the policies and the laws are in place, the culture and the mentality of entrepreneurship in the banking sector, especially our fellow Black African Zimbabweans, has not yet matured.
What does this tell us about the state of the banking sector?
Well, it's really a tragedy because we have always been told that there is a liquidity crisis in the country, a country that has virtually no industrialization, no employment, and where 80% of the adults are informally employed, which means that there is no banking. The banking culture is dead, and until the policies reignite industry, then we are going to be getting more cases of liquidation.
And for depositors, what does this mean?
Well, they've been warned. This is not the first time, really, that an indigenous bank has collapsed. And although there's been frantic efforts by the central bank to put together a deposit protection system, it has not worked. So it's unfortunate that many depositors did not pay heed to the warning that these banks are going to collapse. So it's a good lesson. You know, I think it's important for customers now to look to banks that have credibility and that are sustainable.
And that was economic commentator Rejoice Ngwenya on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
Washington, D.C. legalizes mbanje or marijuana.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The director of counterterrorism programs at the U.S. State Department has been charged with soliciting sex from a juvenile.
A Chinese court has given a suspended 2.5-year prison sentence to an 81-year-old writer who recently criticized a senior Communist Party official.
U.S. President Barack Obama's national security advisor has sharply criticized the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's decision to speak before Congress about the U.S.-led talks with Iran over its nuclear program. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Legalization of pot comes to America's capital, Washington, D.C., tomorrow, though smokers will not catch a fire in public and be allowed to sell marijuana. An adult person in D.C. is expected to grow 6 plants with no more than 3 mature at a given time. Some states, like Colorado, have legalized marijuana for medicinal and recreational purposes. The District of Columbia faces various legal challenges, with Congress still trying to block the legalization of pot, which, according to medical experts, cures some diseases like glaucoma and fits. Zimbabweans have weighed in on the legalization of marijuana in America, saying such moves can devastate Zimbabwe if the country decriminalizes the use of mbanje. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks to Mkululi Ndabambi, a Zimbabwean living in Indiana, USA, and Reverend Josias Mudenda of the Methodist Church and a member of the Zimbabwe Council of Churches. Ndabambi says some American states' move to legalize marijuana is an indication of the country's general liberal policies.
It's the way that America has been going with being liberal in people's personal lives. As we see recently, most states are also legalizing same-sex marriage. So the issue of marijuana use is in a huge way being considered a very small thing anymore.
Reverend Mutenda, what is your view on this issue?
I don't think it is the right thing for society to delve into it, bearing in mind the consequences of taking that weed. So the legalization of it will be tearing the social fabric in a way, because when one takes that weed, definitely it affects their mental faculty. From a spiritual point of view, I also don't think it is something that is that can be delved into, because it is parallel with issues of faith.
Mr. Ndabambi, can you react to what Reverend Mutenda is saying? He's very much concerned about the negative effects of marijuana on society.
Obviously, the Honorable Reverend is a man of the cloth, and, you know, he is obviously likely to preach against something of that nature. Marijuana is an intoxicant. So basically what America has done here is to regulate something that it has found to be prevalent in society. A lot of people are using it. America has got such a huge drug problem such that marijuana use is not regarded as a serious drug. Moreover, what with the medical discoveries of its effectiveness against particular ailments and diseases.
Let's talk about Binga. Binga is an area in Zimbabwe where people can actually smoke marijuana. So when we talk about legalization of marijuana in the USA, how do you compare Binga with, let's say, USA?
These are two different places, two different entities with very different backgrounds. Yes, in the U.S., as much as they can legalize it, but I don't think in Binga, per se, it was legalized. No, just people grew up in that area growing the weed and, of course, smoking it. But after, you know, seeing the after effects of it, yes, I heard my colleague that would be talking about it being medicinal. Yes, I don't know how much scientific that has been proven. But looking at the after effects of that weed, it is what has made people to be sort of very nervous about it, you know. So in Binga, in actual fact, people have said, oh, people smoke freely and they... No. That's a misconception. Because according to the laws of this country, of this land, when you are caught, you know, with that weed, then you have to... You have to serve, you know, behind bars, in as far as the laws of this country are concerned. And yet, people have had the misconception that in Binga you can smoke freely. No, that is not it. Even in the old, they used to use their calabashes, where you not detect that they are smoking that weed, because they knew it was not, you know, it was for public consumption, but it had to be consumed by, you know, a certain kind of people. Where, you know, the elderly and so forth. But now, I think one of the problems is the abuse factor of the weed itself. I think that is what should be looked into. As much as America, Washington, D.C. is legalizing it, but they will have to run in cycles because there's nothing that you can hide after taking that weed.
Mr. Ndabambi, what is your reaction to that?
Obviously, abuse of anything is not good. The biggest point about the marijuana legalization in America is that the population of America, of Americans, even conservative states, and it seems like the winds are blowing that way.
That was Mkululi Ndabambi, a Zimbabwean living in Indiana, USA. You also heard from Reverend Josias Mutenda of the Methodist Church, who is also a member of the Zimbabwe Council of Churches, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Siansundu, Binga, Matabeleland, North Province.
Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Nigeria's Election Commission has postponed the nation's closely watched presidential election for 6 weeks, citing security concerns over the insurgent group Boko Haram's continued attacks in areas of northeast Nigeria. Once set for February 14th, voting will now be held March 28th, as combined operations of troops from Chad, Cameroon, and Nigeria work to reclaim and pacify areas of the country taken over by the insurgents, bent on creating an Islamic State. Despite security concerns, the move brought charges of political interference by the government and sparked fears of political unrest in the hotly contested race. Opposition leaders have called for calm to discourage the kind of violence that marred the voting in 2011. The United States joins others in the international community in voicing deep disappointment in the Election Commission's decision to postpone the election. Any political interference with the Independent National Electoral Commission is unacceptable, and it is critical that the government not use security concerns as a pretext for impeding the democratic process. Given the stakes, it's absolutely critical that these elections be conducted peacefully and that they are credible, transparent, and accountable. That way, the people of Nigeria can have faith, and the world can have faith in the government that flows from it. The international community will be watching closely as the Nigerian government prepares for elections on the newly scheduled dates. The United States underscores the importance of ensuring that there are no further delays. We support a free, transparent, and credible electoral process in Nigeria and renew our calls on all candidates, their supporters, and Nigerian citizens to maintain calm and reject election-related violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. And in sports news, the ZANU-PF sponsored soccer tournament, the Bob 91 Cup, is in jeopardy after Bulawayo team Highlanders indicated they may not play if certain conditions are not met. The finals of the annual tourney that celebrates President Robert Mugabe's birthday were expected to be between holders Dynamos and the winner of a match between Highlanders and Caps United. We reached Highlanders Chief Executive Officer Ndumiso Gumede to clarify their demands to ZANU-PF.
When the organizers approached us only yesterday, we first queried why they are coming so late to tell us of such an important occasion. And then we said, we need to know the rules of the tournament. Secondly, we want to know what's in it for us. In other words, what are the prizes for the winning team? What are the prizes for the losing team? Thirdly, we wanted to know whether the PSL has cleared the games as is normal. Fourthly, we have already committed ourselves to playing in Bidebridge. However, because we are not averse to playing that game, if we are forced to play it, we will play it because we have two very, very strong sides. One side will play Caps here, the other one will still go and fulfill our commitment to Bidebridge.
Oh, but Mr. Gumede, this is the same tournament that you participated last year.
The rules are very important. Whether we had the rules last year, they should tell us that the rules are the same as for last year. They will have given us the rules.
That was Highlanders Football Team Chief Executive Officer Ndumiso Gumede on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Efforts to get a comment from the organizers were fruitless.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, a report by Amnesty International that Zimbabwe still ranks highly in trembling citizens' rights.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Amnesty International says rights abuses continue in Zimbabwe with the torture of pro-democracy voices, forced displacements and disregard of the law by state operatives.
Differences in the MDC formations divide students' activists, resulting today in Zimbabwe National Students Union executive members disrupting a press conference called by ZINASU President Gilbert Mutubuki for apparently supporting a different party.
And Mr. Zimbabwe and three senior Zimbabwean journalists filed an application with the Constitutional Court today seeking an order for criminal defamation to be declared unconstitutional in terms of the new constitution.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, Zimbabwe.